you're missing the patterns, you know? You're like dealing only on the surface. You're not getting at the deeper stuff that's causing all this unhappiness. Mm-hmm. So we've been basically treating symptoms for 20 years and not dealing with the underlying causes, and we're still sick.
Welcome back to Future Proof. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan, by the way. Culture. We're going to talk about culture today. And I know there are people out there who don't think this stuff is important, who don't see any connection between culture and productivity or execution or profits, or who think if they put a foosball table in the break room and let their employees wear jeans, they'll create a kick-ass culture in some way. And they're wrong, right? They're just dead wrong. Culture is one of the most important factors contributing to the success of your organization. It'll determine how engaged your employees are. And judging by the recent research, they're probably not very engaged at all. The folks at Gallup regularly find that as many as 70%, that's 70% of American employees are not engaged in their work, just showing up and collecting a paycheck, in other words, not giving you any discretionary effort. 70%. That's stunning. But imagine what you could do if you could turn that number around, right? If you could actually find a way to engage your employees. Gallup also found that companies with highly engaged workforces outperform their peers by 147% in earnings per share. That's a pretty significant incentive to figure this employee engagement stuff out, isn't it? So where do we start? Well, that's where my guest this week comes in. He's Jamie Nodder. He's an author and consultant who helps leaders drive growth and engagement by activating and aligning workplace culture. He and his co-author, Maddie Grant, they've written two previous books, both of them great books, Humanize and When Millennials Take Over, rather, both of which well worth your time to read. And they've got a terrific new book coming out at the end of January. It's called The Non-Obvious Guide to Employee Engagement for Millennials, Boomers, and Everyone Else. And this book centers on the concept that this conversation about culture really has to start with the definition of employee engagement. What does that phrase actually mean? And I think a lot of us haven't really given it much thought. It's one of those, we know it when we see it kind of things, right? But Jamie and Maddie have actually come up with a definition of employee engagement that turns this entire conversation on its head and leads directly to a blueprint for creating a culture in which employees are much more engaged in their jobs, which makes your organization much more successful by extension. And this is huge because this definition, it's going to reshape how we approach employee engagement and cultures in our organizations. Employee engagement is now a $1 billion industry, right? And there are scores of tools out there that claim they'll help leaders engage their employees or at least assess how engaged they are. And all these tools, Jamie says they're worthless. They give us some interesting data, sure, but they haven't solved the problem, which nearly 70% of American workers continue to be disengaged in their jobs year over year. So clearly something else needs to be done. And Jamie and Maddie's book proposes some really interesting and unique and I think important ideas for how to turn this ship around. And by the way, you've got a culture, whether you know it or not. Even if you haven't done the work to create or improve your culture, you still have one, right? Your people will define what your culture is, good or bad. And this book is a playbook of sorts for how leaders can take back control of culture and make it work for them. So good stuff here from Jamie, as always. He's been trying to turn the culture flywheel for years now. And this book is just the latest example of the important work he's doing. Here's Jamie Nodder. So, Jamie, thanks for being here. First of all, congratulations on the book. It's a terrific read. I think a really important one too. In fact, I'm going to urge my colleagues at the MACPA to read it. We've been talking about this engagement problem for a long time now. So, I guess my first question is, why the book now? What's going on now that made you feel like you wanted to tackle this subject?
Basically, I think because now is the time that we have to declare that we have failed. Like, we have to give up and say, you know what? We've been trying for 20 years to improve engagement. And like, it's not an incremental switch we need to make. You know, it's not like we need to try a little harder. we just felt like we needed to sort of plant a flag and say, nope, we have been missing the point the whole time. We need to start over.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and we've heard the stats on employee engagement for years now, said about almost 70% of American employees disengaged, just kind of punching the clock. About 1 in 5 actively disengaged, which, as Tom says, it means they're plotting against you, right?
Yes,
for lack of a better term. So billions lost in productivity and turnover. First of all, before we get to what we're doing wrong, what's causing this lack of engagement, do you think?
We think that the fundamental reason that employees are disengaged is that we're getting in the way of them being successful. And right, because the measure of engagement is kind of intuitive, right? Like, you know it. You know when you're around an engaged employee, they're energetic, they're committed, they give their extra effort. Like, you've been there, right? We've all done that. Right. We've all been in jobs where we had that, and we want more of that. And we think we want that outcome, that energy, right? That happiness, that satisfaction, that right. So, like, how do we get that? And we have been for 20 years investing billions of dollars in trying to make people happy, make people satisfied, find out what they want and give it to them. And the reason that people are like, the ones that are like not there, they're like, you know, I mean, I'm showing up. I want to get paid. I'll do the work. The reason is because so much of their work life is stacked against them, right? Their work life is filled with things that makes it hard for them to really be successful. And that can be successful personally, like me in my personal life. I can be successful in my role. That can be, is my role even contributing to the success of the organization? All of that gets ignored. And whenever that stuff's out of alignment, that's when you get the people who are just phoning it in.
So that's interesting about the way you define engagement. And you made the point that we've wrongly defined employee engagement for a long time. So go into a little bit about the definition that you use in the book and why it's important that we kind of look at it that way.
Yeah, so in the book, we actually draw on what a lot of people say about engagement. Most people define it vaguely or generally in terms of a level of emotional commitment, right, or connection. And again, intuitively, that makes sense to us. We're like, yeah, I remember when I was engaged, I had that. We basically added to that it's a level of emotional connection or commitment that you get when you can be successful. Mm-hmm. And success is, and this actually comes from the work we've been doing for a couple of years now on culture. We realize that when you do culture work, you have to build your culture in order to make the organization successful. It's not about a cool culture. It's not about being Zappos. It's about the culture that actually works for you and your organization. Mm-hmm. This is kind of applying that concept to the individuals and to the employees, that when they are in an environment, when they can be deeply successful, then they're completely engaged. Then you get all those results that you want. Mm-hmm. But it's the aligning their work and the organization and the culture and the individual with success that develops that sort of outcome. And that's what we've been missing.
And how would you, and I don't want to like peel back too many layers here, but how would you define success? What does that look like in your eyes?
I mentioned earlier, I see three key levels. One level is just, we wrote about this in Humanize actually years ago, like, and this is going to scare people, connecting with my destiny mm-hmm. as a human is part of success. I want the work that I'm doing to be aligned with who I am and who I want to be.
Okay.
So that's a big place where we get misalignment, which is really a hiring issue more than like a culture issue. We just hire the people that are doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, but that's another story.
Right.
Level two is I need to be successful in my role. So success means I can get the resources I need to get done what I need to get done. Mm-hmm. I have access to the people, the decisions, the money, the tools. You put me in a sales position, so I need to get access to customers and I need to be able to offer product that they can want to buy, right? Like, you get in the way of that, you start making it harder for me to do my job. Like, I got to go ask the guy in Dayton to approve this sale. Right. You know, like that, right? You hear stories like that. That's the seeds of disengagement have been sown right there. The next time I'm like, yeah, whatever. No, okay, I can't sell this. No big deal.
Right.
It reduces the effort. It reduces it. And then the third level is, even if you're successful in your role, does what you and everyone else are doing contribute to enterprise success? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, I didn't work there to research there, but can you imagine being an employee at Kodak back in the beginning of the digital camera revolution? And like, you're doing whatever job it is you're doing, and it's great, and you've got resources and you're successful, but you know you're going down because you're missing the digital camera revolution. Like, that would also sow the seeds of disengagement.
I gotcha.
So it's multi-level. It's a little complex, as is anything in life that's important. But those are the sort of the three places you have to look.
So this kind of industry that's been built around engaging employees, it's huge. I mean, you see all these tools. We use a couple of them at the MACPA, and yet we open the conversation by with you saying that we've kind of failed. Okay, so how have we been approaching this from the wrong angles for all this stuff?
So we've been gathering a lot of data, and trying to take action on the data. I guess maybe it's my job as the upstart consultant to say stuff like this, but like, we don't even say this in the book, but I'm saying it now. We have to stop engagement surveys. Just if you do one thing out of this podcast, is you cancel your contract with the engagement survey. And they're all going to get mad at me for saying that. But what we have been doing is well-intended, but wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've been asking our people, hey, what do you like about your job, about the organization, about our processes, about leadership? What is good and bad about it? Like, hey, does senior leadership really communicate the way they should? No. Or yes. We want yeses, right? Mm-hmm. And every time we get yeses, we say, okay, then we don't have a problem. Everything's good. If we get no's, we're like, oh, there's a problem. We should fix our leadership communication. That's, again, well-intended, but what you're measuring is what people like and don't like. You're not getting at the success part. Because some people may not like the way the leadership is communicating about X, Y, and Z, but it may not matter.
Right.
It may not be important to the success of the organization. Maybe nobody has to know. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. You'd have to get into it. But we're not actually gathering data that says, hey, wait a minute, what's getting in the way of success? What are the patterns in the way we operate here that make it harder for everyone or certain people, certain groups, certain divisions to be successful? If we figured that out and solved that problem, you'd get the engagement. But what we do is we go right down to fixing whatever people are unhappy about.
Right.
And sometimes that helps. Like, maybe they were unhappy about communication and you fix communication a little and things get a little bit better. That's fine. But you're missing the patterns, you know? You're like dealing only on the surface. You're not getting at the deeper stuff that's causing all this unhappiness. Mm-hmm. So we've been basically treating symptoms for 20 years and not dealing with the underlying causes, and we're still sick.
Right. So and you go into this in the book in great detail, and I don't want to give away all the secrets, but what... how should we be approaching it? What kind of steps should we be taking when it comes to addressing this disengagement?
So, I mean, one of the key shifts from our perspective is that you have to bring culture into the conversation. Because we believe that it's the patterns inside your culture that are more likely causing the dissatisfaction than the specifics that they're complaining about. Okay. So the specifics matter to some extent, but you got to get down below the surface, which means you have to understand your culture. Your cultural patterns around things like, hey, how do we collaborate in this culture? You know, can we work cross-department easily, or is that kind of hard? Do we share information first, or do we like hold it and decide to share it later? You know, all of those patterns inside your culture are going to be driving a lot of this stuff, and that's where the solutions lie. So step one is you got to understand what your culture is. But then step two, we wanted to not like say this is, we wanted to make this easy. Step two is like, then change some stuff, right? Run some plays. We call it the playbook model, as if it's really fancy. It's not fancy. It's, hey, your culture is made up of processes and structures and designs that and systems that you can change. And as you change them, you will modify the culture. And if you can do that in a way that makes people more successful, you're going to get engagement. Mm-hmm. So come up with some plays in your playbook where you'd say, you know what, we need to change these kinds of processes, or we need to change who reports to whom here because that'll make a difference. We need to do something different within HR that's going to fix things. Like, there's lots that you can do. But once you know that what you're changing is addressing those cultural patterns, it gets a lot easier. If you just pick stuff randomly, it doesn't do stuff. So that's why you need that sort of culture level in there.
Do you have any examples of a play like that that you know can have an impact? What?
Yeah, so we worked with an organization that had become very slow, right? And that was getting in the way of their success. Their customers were actually telling them, hey, 5 years ago, you guys used to keep us ahead of the curve with what you're providing. And now it's like, by the time you release something, we already know, mm-hmm. right? So they know they're not being successful. That's damaging engagement, right? That's making it harder for people to like working there when they're not meeting the needs of the stakeholders, right? So they saw that. But what they also saw when they did the culture work was like, the pattern inside their culture is, they were so committed to inclusion in this culture. Like, everyone was included. To exclude someone was really bad, which is fine. They realized that they were involving everybody in every decision.
And that was slowing them down.
Right? And so there's nothing wrong with inclusion, but if the pattern is, well, we can include everyone in every decision, it's just you're going to have to tolerate a 6-month lag because we have to convene everybody and not everyone's here and we got to get feedback and blah, blah, blah. And so their change was that the play they ran was to introduce the RACI model. You know the RACI model?
So define that again.
It's a decision. It's very simple decision-making matrix, but you give people roles and the roles are responsible, accountable, consulted, or informed, RACI, RACI. So, and they can be defined a different way, but basically the responsible one is the one who's making the decision, the accountable one is kind of the boss. Mm-hmm. But people who are in the C role, the consulted, you can't make a decision without consulting them first. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay? But you still don't have to do what they say, but you need to consult them. Right. And informed, you get to decide without even talking to them.
Right.
They get informed later.
Okay.
Right. And so what they did is they were really rigorous about clarifying what kinds of decisions do I get to be involved in. And there's a bunch for me in my role where I'm in the eye.
Right.
And so I don't get to complain about not going to those meetings mm-hmm. because we got really clear about it. And it takes a little work on the front end, obviously, to define roles and clarify what kinds of decisions. But once they got that decision-making process down, it sped things up.
Got it.
Help them to meet the member needs, help them to be more successful, increases engagement. So it's a fairly small play. And, you know, there's bigger plays like, wow, we need to completely redesign our office space, mm-hmm. you know, to make us more collaborative or whatever. Like, it's going to take 6 months. And, you know, like, some of them are really big, but some of them can be just, hey, we changed the way we facilitate this meeting that we do every week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's really
interesting. As long as you tie it right to the success part, then it'll work.
Very cool. And it strikes me that the elephant in the room in this whole discussion is the generational debate. And I'm sure that there are people out there that will tell you that this is all the millennials' fault, right? So, not so. I mean, what's your take on all that?
So, yeah, well, we almost felt obliged to include a generational angle in the book because we wrote a book called When Millennials Take Over. That's our last one. And it's been a part of my work for a long time. But we brought the millennials and the generational angle in for a couple of reasons. One is, as I've already mentioned, one of the core messages or components of the book is the fact that culture matters. Right, that culture is the driver here. Mm-hmm. And millennials care much more about culture than other generations. I mean, that's part of what makes them different, is that they care about that stuff. And B, and this goes back to when millennials take over, but we think the millennials are shining a light on what the future of work looks like. Okay. Mm-hmm. We think they are seeing or naming some movements in culture that are going to make us a lot more successful moving forward. this is really big picture stuff, but the movement towards transparency, the movement towards agility, the movement towards much, much more intense collaboration. They're moving in that direction already. So as you do the culture work, you're also going to want to have that generational radar on, right? So that you can hear what the millennials are saying and you can hear how it's resonating in different pockets of the organization and then use that to have a better conversation about where we should go forward. That being said, millennials don't own the future of work, you know? Right. And frankly, from our research, they're not yet the ones that are creating it. It's still old folks like me and people older than me that are creating these cool organizations. And the millennials are just looking at us going, well, yeah, why didn't we do that way that 10 years ago? So I like having it on as a radar, but it's not like you need to design part of your culture for the millennials and part for the boomers and part for the Xers. Like that's not the solution. It's more about what drives success. We just believe if you have that generational radar on in the conversation, you get better conversations.
Yeah. I'm interested, and I kind of gathered the answer here, but you know, I hear a lot of people talk about culture as if, you know, it's about having fun at work or do, you know, that type of stuff. I'm just interested, how do you define culture? Because from what I'm hearing you say here today, it's not about that at all.
No, so we do include this in the book, but our definition of culture is that it's the collection of words, actions, thoughts, and stuff that clarify and reinforce what's truly valued in an organization. Mm-hmm. Okay. So culture is not about, and fun can be a value, but that's like we literally put valued with a D in our definition because we didn't want values with an S to get into the conversation, because then it's core values. And then we have these posters on the wall that say we value honesty and integrity and fun, you know, and I'm like, great. Thanks for clarifying that you value honesty and integrity. It really sets you apart from all those organizations that value lying, right? Like, and I get it. I get the intention, but for us, it's much more concrete. It's more like, hey, what are the words you use to describe your culture? Do the actions and the behaviors inside the organization back those words up? And even do the sort of underlying mental models and assumptions you have back those words up? And does all of that make it really clear in your organization to everybody what's valued? Because once people know what's valued, that drives their behavior.
Gotcha.
And so if you want behavior that drives your success, you create a culture that values those behaviors, that values those things. And so having a beer fridge is nice.
Right.
I would have liked that in several of my jobs earlier in my career. And that would have made me happy. But it is tangential. It's tangential to success. I mean, being happy helps you people succeed. But that's like this much of it. It's a tiny piece of what really drives success. So those things are on the edges, and they frustrate me when people sort of focus on that. And so culture is really about changing the way you do things and how you operate inside the system to make sure that what's valued is clear and that what's valued drives success.
Got it. So when did the book come out?
Book will officially be released on January 31st.
January 31st. Okay.
So it's up for pre-order now, but comes out at the end of the month.
Cool. What kind of reactions you're getting from folks like me who've gotten an early peek at it?
Good. It's always fun. I mean, Maddie and I are kind of addicted to writing books, actually. So we're going to do this for a long time, but it's interesting to see the reactions people get. We actually had a millennial, that read the book and she said the appendix was the best part where you talked about the generations and how they were formed. And that was like, I'm like, okay, she obviously hadn't read one. people sort of look for different things. This book is part of a series, okay, called the Non-Obvious Guidebook series. And so we wrote the Non-Obvious Guide to Employee Engagement. This is from our publisher, Rohit Bhargava, who writes an annual trends book called Non-Obvious. This is sort of his thing. And it says on the cover, it's like, or on the back, it says, like having coffee with an expert.
Yeah.
right? And we really took that to heart when we wrote this book. We love to write books. We actually love to write pretty theoretical stuff, but we wrote this one to be very hard-hitting and practical. Like, this is it. You want to sit down and you want to improve engagement? Do these things. And so I'm excited about that because it's sort of the first time we've really written a book down at that level. But it was exciting to write, and that's what gets me really happy is that people are seeing that right away.
Well, it came through. I mean, you called it a playbook, and it reads as if, you know, you do this and then this and then this, and it was very practical, an easy read, but really powerful too. And what I love about the book is also there's a lot of, it's almost interactive in a way. It's pointing readers to tons of other online resources and content. And talk a little bit about that. The process must have been a little bit more complex than just simply putting words on a page.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'll give some credit to my publisher on this because he crafted sort of a structure for this. He said, "Here's how we want these guidebooks to flow. Here's how we want them to work." And we embraced that sort of constraint, and it actually opened up a lot of creativity. Like, we could just say, "Oh, great! Then this is exactly how we need to write this." We wrote the whole thing in about 6 weeks.
Wow!
And it's a shorter book than some of our other ones, but still, I was surprised we could get that done that quickly. But then part of the structure is we want you to be able to point to resources outside of the book so that people can get things done. And of course, Maddie and I have been living online for a decade now. And so we're like, great. So we already had things set up. We have a whole website on culture tools that we could point people to. And we created a section of our own website now for resources for this book. So there's templates up there that we've used in our consulting. Like, again, back to the sort of tangible piece of this, we wanted people to like take this and run with it. That was the whole point. So there's some concrete stuff that people can then use and sort of play with on their own as part of the process.
Awesome. So first steps, you want to flip the switch on employee engagement, but don't know how. Where do you start?
So I believe very strongly that you have to start with what we call the what is of your culture. Mm-hmm. And there's a million ways to do that. We obviously are consultants. We have a culture assessment, blah, blah, blah. That's like, fine. You don't want to use a culture assessment? You don't have to. You need to have conversations internally about what is our culture here. And specifically, I would point, I don't even know if I remember now if I said this in the book. When you have those conversations, if you just want to do it like around the table with teams, or if you're a small organization with the whole group, that's fine. I want to know what your culture is. If you have to define it in sort of specific terms, I'll give you four key areas to focus on. Collaboration. How do we collaborate here? Not are we good at collaboration, just how do we do it? Is it easy? Is it hierarchical? Like, do we, you know, how do we do it? You just have to describe that. Mm-hmm. So collaboration is one of them. Transparency is the other. You got to do information flow, both vertical and horizontal. What is valued? What is not valued? How do we do it? Agility is the third. And that's a lot of that's around decision making. And a lot of that is around power. Who has the power to do what?
Okay.
Right. Like, does the person in front of the customer have the power to solve the customer's problem? Mm-hmm. Not if you work for American Airlines, I can attest. won't go into that story. right. So collaboration, transparency, agility, and last one's innovation. There's no organization on the planet that can say, "Well, innovation doesn't matter to me." Well, at least that's my view now. So how do you do it? Do you only give lip service to the concepts behind innovation, or do you actually have processes in place to support the experiments and beta testing and prototyping and that kind of thing? You just need to know how you do it. You don't have to be cutting edge. You don't have to be Google, blah, blah, blah. But you need to know where you stand on those four areas. There's others you can look into, but those would be the ones I'd start with. Just come up with a paragraph on each. Here's how we do this. Here are the key patterns in this. If you write that up, that's going to be the guide for all your engagement work, all your plays. And it doesn't have to be perfect. The more nuanced it is, I think the better your plays are going to be. But start with what is. Then start designing plays that are going to shift that in a way that you think is more positive.
Nice. Nice. Great, great advice. So, from a guy who's addicted to writing books, what have you been reading lately that's kind of had an impact on you?
So I just read, Rich Sheridan's new book. He's the CEO of Menlo Innovations, which is one of our case studies in When Millennials Take Over. But Chief Joy Officer, his first book was called Joy Inc. But I really like it because he goes into much more detail in this than he did in his first book about, from my perspective, about the what is of his culture there, mm-hmm. particularly around transparency. And particularly around decision making, because it's a very flat is sort of the wrong word, but they're so transparent about their process that they don't have reporting relationships.
Interesting. Wow.
But he gets to spell that out. I love the books that really spell it out in great detail. Mm-hmm. And then The Art of Gathering, I think it's called. I just finished it.
I've got it on my bedside table and I haven't started it yet. Good? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. She's the woman who wrote that comes from the conflict resolution field. I know some of the people she writes about because that was my field back in the 90s. Nice. But it was a huge reminder about being intentional about stuff. Mm-hmm. Intentional about your meetings, intentional about what the purpose is. Because so much of what we do is, you know, though we've always done it that way, or just not even like, because I don't want to change, just sort of rote, like, you know, tradition. And we end up designing our work processes, including meetings, which would be in her context, in ways that actually cause us to fail. Obvious, right? So that's the connection with us, right? Like, yeah, if you really want to be successful, then you design your meetings very carefully.
Right, right.
And so I really liked that. And I thought she had a lot to say about that.
Nice.
But yeah, it was, you know, the end of the year, I had some time off and I actually read a book or two, but yeah. I wish I could read more.
Yeah, that's cool. Now I'm looking forward to reading those. So cool. Jamie, thanks for the time. Thanks for the insights. I appreciate you being here and good luck with the book.
No, thanks very much. Appreciate you having me.
That was Jamie Nodder. He's a consultant who helps leaders drive growth and engagement by activating and aligning workplace culture. He's the co-author of a terrific new book, too, called The Non-Obvious Guide to Employee Engagement. And as I said when I was talking to Jamie, this book has a really kind of a cool and unique format to it. It's almost interactive in a way. It points readers to tons of other online resources and videos and other content. Definitely cool, eye-opening stuff as well. The book comes out at the end of January. You can get details and order it now by visiting jamienotter.com. That's JAMIENOTTER.com.